The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Inside the Huddle. This is our pregame show for Indiana versus Florida International. The game kicks off Saturday evening at 8 o'clock at Memorial Stadium in Bloomington. We're hoping for a good one. FIU came off of last week. They beat up to Florida at Central Florida. They've had 9 days to prepare for Indiana. Indiana is coming off a narrow victory over Southern Illinois, where the defense did not look that stout or not all that good. Any way you want to put it, they did not look great in that win over Southern Illinois. We welcome in our co-host, TJ Inman. TJ, how are you this week?
I'm doing very well, Sammy. Excited to move on from Southern Illinois and just, as we said on Monday's recap show, just be glad that the disaster was avoided and we can discuss another opponent. And I'm looking forward to week two already. Week one was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's, you know, the most important thing was that they did get the win and they move on. There was, you know, it looked like Coach Wilson got a little testy there at the press conference on Monday. He issued a statement regarding the players that were suspended, saying that they weren't suspended, that they were not just not available. And then he retracted that statement and clarified it, saying that the 8 players were suspended for 1 game and Tigray Scales would be suspended for 2. So no Tigray Scales in week 2 against Florida International. It will be, you know, that Indiana gets some reinforcements with Ralph Green and Darius Latham coming back. Greg Gooch also comes back to give some bandits some time off. But Tigray Scales is a big loss at outside linebacker.
Yes, yeah. Tigray Scales, in my opinion, is the best defensive player that they have. I don't know if he's the most important, but because I think the other guy that you might throw into that equation might be Chase Dutra, and we do not know the status of Chase Dutra either. Believe me, we and several others have asked. You know, we've done our best to find out whether or not Chase is going to be available this Saturday or, you know, any timeline, really, and no one knows, or the people that do know aren't telling us. And yeah, so I think you're looking at Tigray Scales and Chase Dutra both. I would guess, and this is just a guess, I would guess that neither one is going to play on Saturday. And those are two really big losses. You know, you have your best linebacker and your best secondary player, or at least your most experienced secondary player, that are going to be missing for a game against not an explosive offense, but an offense that showed they are capable of moving the ball. Definitely going to be things that hurt, but it is good to get the two defensive line guys back, Ralph Green and Darius Latham. That's going to be a big help. Hopefully cause some disruption in the backfield, because against SIU, they were really unable to get any negative plays against that offense, whether it be pass rush things, that was virtually non-existent, or even breaking up some of the run plays that SIU ran, breaking those up in the backfield. There was really no disruption from the defensive line. I think Ralph Green and Darius Latham would be the two guys that would provide that on Saturday, hopefully. And if they don't, then I think you're looking at a big concern for the Hoosiers defense moving forward, because there's really no one else coming that would provide that. So that's good. Greg Gooch, yeah, back at Bandit linebacker. He's playing behind Zach Shaw. I'm not sure how many snaps Gooch is going to get. I think that Shaw played... he said he played 70 snaps. I don't know, but he was certainly in the game a lot. and will be again on Saturday. So I'm not sure how much Greg Gooch is gonna see action, but for me, looking at the big question, since we're talking about the defense, is how big of an improvement is there going to be for all of these young players from week one to week two? Typically, you hear that the biggest jump you have for young players is between that first week and that second week, because they've been through a week of it, and now they know it's not practice anymore. It's not just people telling them. Now they've gotten actual game experience. They've been through that, 60 minutes of it, and they know exactly what it is that they're preparing for moving forward, and there's usually a big jump up. And I think that the question for this, especially the secondary, is going to be how big of a jump is going to occur throughout the season and how big of a jump is there going to be from week one to week two. You know, we're not going to know the answer to that until the FIU game, but there has to be a significant jump forward. And I think one thing we're going to talk about is the defensive staff coming under some very public criticism. And then, you know, Brian Knorr talking this week about, and some of the players talking about, Dunn at practice and in meetings to attempt to improve the communication of this defense, because they felt that communication and maybe sticking a little bit too close to a script that you can't really follow once the game starts were kind of the big issues that cost them on Saturday.
Yeah, and you know, Wilson was very upset with the defensive staff. I felt that he kind of threw them under the bus, saying that they, I've been trying to tell them at practice to prepare for the unprepared, to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, you know, however you want to phrase it. But ultimately it comes down to, this is, you know, he's the head coach. This is a huge year for him. I know some people don't believe that, and I think they're crazy, but this is a huge year for him and he needs to win. And I think the pressure is kind of, you know, he kind of threw Knorr under the bus there for saying that he's, you know, not really practicing correctly, which ultimately comes down to, that's the head coach's responsibility. You know, done. Anyway, going in, back to FU, they did not have a negative play in the run game last week. They rushed, you know, 31 times for 134 yards. I think they took a knee and lost 3 yards, but other than that, there was no sacks, no tackles for loss in a running game, which is where IU struggled last week, and it's going to be one of the keys to the game for Indiana, is to get into those third situations where the defense can be more successful. Last week, I think Indiana was or Southern Illinois was 11 for 17 on third down conversions. Not sure how many of those were third and short. A lot of them were. It seemed like Southern Illinois was picking up, you know, 5, 6, 7 yards a play on first down and setting up those, you know, third and shorts, second and shorts that you know, it's very tough to stop. Even if with the good defense, it's tough to stop on third and twos. Florida International does have some talented players. You know, Thomas Owens, different TO, not Terrell Owens, but he had 11 catches for 78 yards. Jonnu Smith, who's their tight end, has caught a ball in, I think, 25 straight games. So they have their playmakers. Indiana struggled guarding the tight end last week against Adam Funchy. But, you know, you're right, TJ, you got to adjust. It's week two. You've seen what FIU did on tape against Central Florida. You'd expect them to come out. Ron Turner's been around for a long time. You know the offense he runs. It's very similar to Indiana. So, you know, the steps must be taken. Indiana's offense, going to the offensive side of the ball, they're going to be challenged. FIU is a fast, stout defense. They held Central Florida to 46 yards rushing on 30 attempts, so that's 1.5 yards per carry, 249 total yards. there were several throws that the Central Florida quarterback threw where their Florida International's DBs jumped a route, almost had picks, had pick sixes. That's something that Nate Sudfeld's going to have to be wary about, is trying to fit that ball into those tight spaces, tight windows. We saw him try to do that against Southern Illinois. A couple of those balls should have been picked. So Nate Sudfeld's going to have to take care of the ball, maybe use a pump fake and a stop-and-go route to take advantage of that aggressiveness and kind of neutralize the speed that FIU has on defense.
Yeah, the first thing that jumped out to me when we were watching the game that they played against Central Florida was the speed that they have on the defensive side of the ball. Describe it as a fast and aggressive defense, particularly in the secondary. The big question for me is going to be can the IU wide receivers get separation on these DBs as fast as they are? And what that comes down to is, one, crisp route running. You've got to be sharp in your routes, because if you're playing against an aggressive secondary, your quarterback needs to know exactly where you're going to be. So he needs to have 100% trust that you are going to be in the correct place when he throws that ball. If not, then the secondary can break on it. If the receiver is a couple feet off of where he needs to be, that's certainly enough space for a pass to get picked off and, like you said, go the other way for six. I looked up a couple of numbers that after watching them play Central Florida, and you're right, they were really, really good against Central Florida's run game. So I wanted to find out kind of that meant, because it's really hard after 1 week, because you don't know, is Central Florida just not very good, or is FIU a lot better than people thought, or, there's really no way of knowing after just one game. It's such a small sample size, but...
Yeah, and let's remember that Central Florida was up 14-3 at halftime. It took a blocked field goal for Florida International to win. So it wasn't like they came out and dominated. Yeah, they shut them out in the second half, and they played really well. But, Central Florida had this game in hand almost, and FIU snatched it away.
Yeah, and Central Florida in 2014, which, again, this is not necessarily a tell-all stat at all, but I think it is telling. Central Florida was not a good rushing team in 2014, and they did not really add any pieces that would lead you to believe they'd be a lot better in 2015. They were only 87th in rushing offense in 2014. So it's very possible that it's a poor rushing attack that FIU shut down. I mean, look, it's impressive to hold a team to a yard and a half per carry and 46 yards on the ground. That's impressive. I don't care who you're playing against. But it's not as if they're playing a great rushing attack in Central Florida. So the size and kind of the weight of the Florida International defensive line, they're not small by any means, but it's not a huge defensive line either. Definitely not a huge linebacker core. I think that IU will have success running the football if they stay committed to it, which we know that they will. They're not going to abandon the running attack. They know it's the strength of this team. So I think that IU is going to have some success. I don't think it's realistic to expect them to once again have like 260 yards on the ground, but I do think that Jordan Howard's going to have another nice day. One thing I'm looking to see is, can Divine Redding cut down on some of the negative runs that he had? And not all his fault at all. It's just sometimes that's maybe the play call. The defense was able to read it and get into the backfield, or maybe just a missed block or something. And a couple of them I thought that he sort of failed and got himself caught. But I'm looking to see if he can improve on his yards per carry average, which was, I think, 3.6. It was significantly less than Jordan Howard's, but I do think that IU's running game can have some success.
Negative runs came on outside runs. Where I don't think he really has the speed to get at the edge all the time. But, you know, we'll see how they at Jordan Howard was very impressive, as everybody has said. And we'll see, you know, this, you're right. The run game is the strength of the Indiana offense right now. The passing game's there too. You know, Sudfeld threw for 345 yards, but it to wear this Florida International team down, you're going to have to run the ball. And that's the style of runner Jordan Howard is too, is he's going to run over people. He's going to run by people. He doesn't have that next level speed or that next gear that Tevin Coleman had, but he's going to get a couple carries where he gets, you know, 35, maybe 40 yards, or bust one for a touchdown. So, and these cornerbacks aren't too big. So maybe he runs a couple over them and they starting to have to, you know, maybe load the box a little bit and it opens up the passing game. So it'll be a tough game against FIU. I think IU opens as 7.5-point favorites. I believe it was you who told me that it was, the over-under was 53.5, which seems very low, especially for an IU game and an IU team who led up 47 points to Southern Illinois. But, you know, it's 8 o'clock game. It should be thankfully cooler. It won't be a gazillion degrees again. So hopefully fans come out. You know, hopefully they didn't lose all the fans from before, you know, from that performance. Other than that, I mean, special teams, Indiana's going to have to step it up on special teams. They did basically nothing and gave up 9 points, I think Wilson said, 2 on the 2-point conversion and 6 on the block punt. They have to clean up a lot of stuff. These are things that if FIU outperforms them on special teams, FIU is going to be right there in the game. Special teams are huge. Nobody, you know, Wilson dresses it, but yet you see there hasn't been really any improvement. I know it's one game, but there hasn't been any improvement from, you know, last year where they didn't really do anything. I mean, you know, that they get the ball to the 20-yard line on kickoffs and they get a few touchbacks, but there's no game-changing plays on special teams that IU needs to do to start winning some of these games.
Yeah, I thought Griffin Oakes had a positive day kicking off. He did exactly what you want him to do, just put the ball through the end zone. I thought punting, once Eric Toth got punts off, I thought he was fine. I'm not entirely sure what the average on his punts was. I think it was 40, 41, and then, the net on those, however, and we talked about this a little bit on our recap show, so we won't go back into it, but the net on those punts was not very good due to a couple over kicks that he put in the end zone. And you go ahead.
It was like 24.6 yards. I believe that, you know, the block punt counts as minus net too. So that, you know, but the punts he got off later in the game were very good. They got one down, I think at the 6. And then the other ones with no returns on fair catches were 40 plus yards. So, you know, it, like I said in the recap last week, it was a roller coaster game for the special teams, but they need to have it more consistent. They need to have it better because this team is better than FIU or Florida International is better than Southern Illinois, and their defense is going to be better. And you know what? If Indiana's defense is not doing the job, they're going to have to score on special teams. And there's no two ways around it. So special teams will be a key this week. It's always a key for me because it could make or break the game a lot of times. TJ, what else does FIU do on offense or defense that Hoosier fans should know?
Well, the first thing that jumps out to me about their offense is the size of the receiving targets. You have Jonnu Smith, who, for those that don't know, he was in our top 5 opposing tight ends. He was in that series that we had. We're not the only ones that feel that way. I mean, he's an NFL prospect because of his combination of size and athleticism. You know, he's 6'3". I don't know how much he weighs, but he's very big. Big target that moves well. They also have another guy who was listed at tight end, but these two used to play as receiving targets mainly. Yakeem Griner, he's 6'4". Thomas Owens, he's their best receiver. He's 6'1". Had double-digit catches last week. And then Clinton Taylor, the other starting wideout, 5'10". So, yeah, that's a big, big group of receiving targets going against a secondary that, you know, if Rashard Fant plays, which we hope that he does, but he is dealing with the gone through concussion protocol stuff. I think it's expected he's going to play, but we don't know. So you're looking at a pretty undersized secondary and a pretty very, very young secondary that's just not physically mature. So the size disadvantage that IU is going to be at in the secondary when FIU does target these big receivers, I think is going to be something to watch. Personally, I think that Mark Iannotti is a better quarterback than what IU is going to see this week. Alex Magoe had a good week last week, 29 of 38 passes. However, the average pass that he attempted was well under 10 yards. So they don't really stretch the field with him very much, or at least they didn't last week. They might try to take some chances after seeing what the IU secondary gave up last week. But against Central Florida, it was mainly passes and quick outs and quick slants to their big targets in the middle of the field. Their running game, not really overwhelming. I think it's a decent offense, but I said the same thing about SIU, that they didn't have a lot of targets that should be able to really hurt IU with big plays, but then we all saw the game, and that's not what happened. So,
We all made mistakes. I said that Mark Iannotti was not a threat to run the ball. And
exactly,
happened.
And he wasn't. He wasn't. That's what was so confusing about last week, and I know that it caught IU's defense off guard because that is not something that Southern Illinois had done last season with Mark Iannotti. They had not run that inside zone read stuff with him, and credit to their coaching staff and to him for throwing that wrinkle in there. I don't think that they expected it to work as well as it did, but when they saw that it was working, they just kept hitting it and hitting it over and over again, and you can bet that FIU is going to attempt to do some of the same things, and we'll see if the IU defense has made any adjustments to it, or if having Latham and Green in the middle of that defensive line is going to help kind of break those plays up before they get into the second level of the defense. But, yeah, you're right. We got that wrong. There was nothing in Mark Iannotti's past statistics that showed he would be a running threat to the extent that he was. So I don't feel bad about missing that one, but I'll say the same thing here about FIU's offense. There's not a ton of big plays. Last week, they had three plays of 25 yards or more, which for as many offensive plays as they ran, that's not a ton. They only had one play of more than 30 yards. That's not a lot of explosive plays, but they were still able to rack up almost 400 yards of total offense. But the strength of this team, and if they are to – I think that if FIU is to have a successful season, it's going to be on the back of their defense, which we've talked about some. The offense for them should not cause good defenses very many problems, but it's to say that IU has a good defense at this point. If IU is able to play a decent game defensively, I think that the Hoosiers have enough offensive firepower to win this one on Saturday night, but the big question is going to be, can the guys that are returning from suspension make a big enough difference, plus the guys that have now had a game of experience, plus whatever communication improvements they've been able to make. And the staff said that they have approached things a little bit differently this week. They have had the freshmen making the play calls and making kind of those signal checks and things like that that happen pre-snap. They've had the freshmen doing that before every play that they've run in off or on defense this week during practice, and they're going to continue to do that to try and help them be able to improvise when things don't go quite as you expect them to once the game gets going. And it sounded to me like that was the big issue that the IU defense had, was that they had a plan. The plan was quickly blown apart, as I think is pretty standard once you get into a football game, and then the young IU defense was unable to adjust to things. And that's really what it looked like, because when they came out in the second half, it looked like they had adjusted once they got in the locker room. And those first, what was it, two or three series that IU's defense played in the second half were actually good. They got stops, they got three and outs, Indiana took control of that game, and they had a chance to kind of separate themselves a little bit, and that was the only time really that the offense sort of stumbled. But the defense looked like it made some adjustments and was able to get off the field on a couple of third downs and force some punts. Then you had the fourth quarter start, and SIU made some adjustments, and the Indiana defense was unable to adjust to those adjustments. And then again, points started pouring in for the Salukis. So I think the big thing is going to be, can this defense adjust once things go off plan, which is going to happen in every game. And I'm not sure if they're experienced enough to do it at this point, but the coaching staff is aware of the problems. There's no way they can't be aware of them. And we're going to see on Saturday night whether or not they were able to make enough improvements throughout the course of the week to have it make a positive difference. I think if the defense plays a decent game, it's going to be enough for IU to win this one by a couple of possessions.
Yeah, the defense in that Southern Illinois game, they allowed the offense to go on a 17-0 run that got Indiana back. We said that was the turning point of the game. It was more like turning points. But that, you know, going on a 17-0 run there, I think, you know, if you're Kevin Wilson, I would challenge the defense. And if you win the toss, defer, I would play defense. I would kick. If you win the toss, I would say I want to kick and let them take the ball and give your defense, you know, say that you have some confidence in them and give them a shot to stop them. FIU, you're right, they're not an explosive offense. They only had 400 yards of total offense, which nowadays is not, you know, the greatest. But you give your defense, a kick in the pants and get going and say, hey, guys, we have faith in you. Let's go stop them and have our offense score. They'll be fired up, ready to go. I think emotionally, it's the second game for a lot of these players, which should be, you know, get their nerves a little bit more at ease. It shouldn't take as long to settle in. It won't be as hot, which they said wasn't a factor, but when, Southern Illinois is running you up and down the field and you're missing significant players on defense, it's got to take a hit. Some things Indiana defense needs to do, they need to break up a pass. They did not break up a pass against Southern Illinois. These corners need to do something. The safeties need to do something. Now, Chase Stutra, I would list him as doubtful, but we'll see. You never know at Wilson what he's going to do. I would list him as doubtful, but these defensive backs need to play better. You know, get a pass breakup, and the defensive line and the front seven have got to get a push. They were getting blown off the ball against Southern Illinois, and they need to get the push and into the backfield that'll make, Alex Magoo a little uncomfortable there. So those are, some of the keys of the game. We'll see how they come out. You're right, TJ, Indiana should win this game. I could see them winning it comfortably if some of these things happen. If they don't play well, it's going to be another nail biter, and we'll see where it goes from there. And you head into week three very, very nervous.
Yeah, I think that they will need to play a good game to have me feeling confident going to Western Kentucky. Not that my confidence has any impact on anything, but it would help me throughout the week, that's for sure. I do think that the defense will be improved, and that's not going out on a limb because the bar is very low for improvement. But I do think that they will have a better second game, largely especially because the depth is going to be better with these guys back, and that helps. It does. Having a bigger rotation helps things, particularly late in the game. And then I just think that they are going to have – the young players are going to have a better grasp of what's required of them throughout this week of practice, and that they'll have a little bit better game on Saturday night. I don't know how much better, but I do think it's going to be improved enough to get a win. But really, there are so many question marks heading into the game that it's impossible to feel confident about predicting anything. So I'm just looking forward to seeing what adjustments are made. I'm looking forward to seeing the IU offense on the field again. They were quite a bit of fun to watch, which was really good to see after the second half of last year, which was nobody's fault. It was just the situation that it was in 2014 after Sudfeld went down. But it was just a lot of fun to see an offense that we hadn't really seen click like that since 2013. It was good to see that IU offense kind of there in vintage form, and I'm looking forward to watching that again because it's just fun to see Nate Sudfeld conducting an offense when it's rolling. But, yeah, like I said, so many question marks, it's impossible to feel really good about any prediction, but I think that IU wins by something like 10 points, and as you mentioned, that over-under of 53, I think that is I think that's asking a bit much of both defenses to keep the total under 53. I would be really surprised if it went under there. Not that we're giving anyone any gambling advice or anything like that, but I would expect more points to be scored than what that would suggest.
Yep. Well, that'll do it for our coverage for IU FIU. But we're going to take a view around the Big Ten right now to close out the show. TJ, we just put out your viewing guide for week two. There are some great games headlined by Oregon, Michigan State. But we'll start with some of the noon games and go in order, chronological order. Oregon State plays at Michigan. So, you know, the Beaver State is coming to the Mitten State in both cases. This game's at noon on ABC. Michigan's 0-1. They fell to Pac-12 team last week at Utah. And Oregon State's coming off, Gary Anderson's first win there with a 26-7 victory over Weber State over in the FCS ranks.
Yeah, Oregon State is expected to be one. I think they're expected probably them and Washington and Washington State to be kind of the three weakest members of the Pac-12, which Pac-12 did not have a good week one. And I don't anticipate Oregon State coming to the Big House in Jim Harbaugh's debut home game, which – you know, Michigan Stadium is going to be pretty pumped up to have him back on the sidelines for his home debut. The big question for Michigan is going to be to play the quarterback. For now, they're sticking with Jake Rudock. He threw three interceptions against Utah. Jim Harbaugh came out this week on Monday or Tuesday and very publicly defended Jake Rudock, which you'd expect, but he put two of those interceptions on by the wide receivers. I don't know enough about their offense to know whether or not that's true, but Jake Rudock did not look good against Utah. However, the Michigan defense did look pretty salty, and I would anticipate that that's going to be enough for them to win, even if the offense doesn't get rolling. But a concern for Michigan is going to be the quarterback play and the offensive line play. They didn't run the ball very well at all. I wouldn't anticipate that Jake Rudock would be the starter for the entire season. I think Shane Morris is going to get a chance at some point, but this Saturday it's still going to be Rudock, and I think Michigan gets Harbaugh's first win as head coach of the Maize and Blue there. So I would anticipate a big crowd, a low-scoring, ugly game, and a win for Michigan.
Yeah, I totally agree that crowd's going to be fired up as well. It is Harbaugh's first game. Next, we move to Western Illinois. Illinois was supposed to have, you know, 8 days to prepare for this game. They shouldn't need eight days to prepare for this game. But it's a noon game, 11 a.m. Central. Western Illinois. They're an FCS team. It's Western Illinois. Did I say Eastern Illinois? Somebody else is playing Eastern Illinois. But
yes, they are. Yeah.
You know, Illinois looked good against Kent State. We don't know how great Kent State is, but 52-3 is impressive. Western Illinois came off and knocked off Eastern Illinois 33-5 in a blowout there in a rivalry game. So we'll see how they, Illinois should be able to put up points. They should be able to score. Should start the year 2-0.
Yeah, Western Illinois beat Eastern Illinois last week, 33-5. So there you go, the Leathernecks. Pretty cool name. They've got a cool mascot dog with a leather collar, so they decided to name themselves the Leathernecks. What was interesting to me about that Illinois-Kent State game, which I didn't see hardly any of it, it was a blowout very quickly, 28-0 before you really didn't have a chance to get settled in. But the stats from that game are really interesting. Yes, 52-3 final. Yes, Illinois totally deserved to win that game by quite a few points. But the final yardage total, Illinois only had 70 more yards than Kent State. But Kent State turned the ball over 4 times, and they turned it over in very poor spots. As a result, only 2 of Illinois' scoring drives were longer than 38 yards. So they had, I think, 4 touchdown drives that were like somewhere in the range of 10 to 30 yards. So they got the ball in really good position, took advantage of it, but it's the 52-3 line made it look like they had quite a bit better of a performance than they actually did. But that was a good win for that program because it's been a very, very rough off season for them. So they got some cathartic release beating up on the Golden Flashes.
Next we move to Bowling Green at Maryland. Bowling Green lost to Tennessee last week. They did put off, 30 points on a strong Tennessee team. Maryland looked very impressive, especially in the special teams area where William Likely broke Niall Kinnick's record for most punt return yards in a game. He had 233 yards. So it'll be interesting to see how that defense stands up and plays. They did let up 21 points to Richmond. Bowling Green does have a very strong offense. So we'll see. Bowling Green has beat Big Ten teams before. We all know this. Every IU fan knows this. So we'll see where they go from there.
Yeah, Dino Babers is a really good offensive coach. They have a good offensive system at Bowling Green. Matt Johnson, a really, really good quarterback. He had, 424 yards. Yeah, 424 yards, 2 touchdowns. They had 557 yards of offense against Tennessee, but they gave up 399 rushing yards to the Volunteers. That's a lot of rushing yards. Reminds me of IU-Wisconsin games. Maryland, so the biggest question I had about them was their passing game because replacing a quarterback, Perry Hills ends up starting and threw for only 138 yards, and no receiver had more than 37 yards. And they're having to replace pretty much all of their wide receiver production, which was a strength for them last year. So that was and still is the big question mark I have for the – William Likely is not likely, no pun intended, to replicate the 233 punt return yards he had that sparked that victory for them. So I think Maryland's kind of on upset alert here. I think Bowling Green is going to be in this one from the outset, and I expect this to be a pretty exciting game. If you have nothing better to do, you can do a lot worse than watching Maryland and Bowling Green at noon.
Yeah, it should be. If you like points, I'd watch that game.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't until 8, get your tailgate going, prop up a TV. Next game is the Buffalo Bulls at Penn State Nittany Lions. Last week, Penn State lost for the first time in, 70 years since. Joe Paterno was 14 years old. It's a Temple. It was probably a program low. Christian Hackenberg looked awful. He threw, you know, he had 100-something yards throwing. He was under 50%. He was sacked a whopping 10 times. So it's the same old for Penn State, it looks like. You know, so they got to get things corrected if they're going to win this. Buffalo did beat Albany, a fellow upstate New York team, 51-14. So it'll be interesting to see if Buffalo's defense can get in Hackenberg's face. If they do, who knows? Anything could happen.
Yeah, I don't think Penn State fans are confident about any game right now. They are favored by 3 touchdowns in this one or something around that, like 21, 22 points or something. I'm not sure they can score that many points right now. The offensive line appears to have regressed. There's no doubt that Christian Hackenberg has regressed. Why anyone would feel confident about taking him in the first round of an NFL draft is beyond me. He looks totally, totally shaken. He's virtually a statue. He's immobile. He doesn't help his offensive line at all. And the offense, their coordinators, John Donovan, their offensive coordinator, appeared during the game to have absolutely no confidence in Hackenberg or his receivers. They did not take virtually any shots down the field. And by down the field, I mean like past 15 yards. It was an incredibly conservative game plan. And Temple beat them 27-10, and it was no fluke. Penn State was ahead 10-0, and after that, it was ugly. The honeymoon period for James Franklin, as well as he's recruiting, the honeymoon period is over. I think that their fans are now definitely concerned about the offense that is being run right now. And I'd say that John Donovan really needs to turn stuff around. And they lost Naeem Warpin-White, their best linebacker. He's been lost for the season. So I don't know. I don't know what to expect from Penn State. I would say if you want points, definitely watch the Bowling Green Maryland game. Do not turn this one on.
Yeah, TJ, we looked there for a second. Hopefully people got the gist of what you were saying. Anyway, we're going to move on.
I was really smart. I was really smart, trust me. That was probably the best 60 seconds I've had the whole time we've been on the show. So
he was spitting out billion-dollar ideas as he cut out there. Anyway, we're going to move on from Buffalo to Indiana State at Purdue. Purdue looked a lot, very much improved over in their loss against Marshall. Their running game looked very, very good. Their defense looked improved. Austin Appleby looked horrible. He threw 4 picks. 2 of them went back for touchdowns. In a game that Purdue was in, they had a lead late, and they lost 41-21. They should be able to beat Indiana State by a significant amount. This will be I don't want to say a FCS game's a statement game, but this will show you just what they could do and hopefully improve upon Austin Appleby's numbers. So it is an in-state battle, and it is time to show those home fans what steps you've taken to improve over the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think that any time you have a struggling program, it's important when you can to pick up very comfortable wins and really feel good about yourself. DJ Knox and Markell Jones looked good as a running back tandem. I thought Appleby looked pretty good at times, but then, like you said, he just some head-scratching turnovers that you really can't have in your starting quarterback. You can't afford to have 4 interceptions. As for Indiana State, they beat Butler handily, but that does not mean anything, and I would not expect them to challenge Purdue.
And now moving on to Miami of Ohio at Wisconsin. Wisconsin lost 31-17 against Alabama last week. And really, that's what we expected. Alabama ran all over them. It's nothing to, nothing to hang your head about. They are a top, 5 team. Wisconsin needs to bounce back. They need to look good against Miami of Ohio. You can't just beat this team, you know, 28-10 and rely on Corey Clement. This offense has to do something other than run the ball well. So hopefully, you know, maybe they open it up a little bit, but I do expect the Wisconsin win at home. That game's at noon on ESPNU.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for Wisconsin is going to be just to reestablish that running game. Alabama has the best front seven in the country, so, you know, it's not a shock that they were unable to run the ball against them. But I feel like Wisconsin fans probably thought, yeah, Alabama's defense is really good, but we'll still have some success running the ball. They didn't have any. They had 40 yards rushing. I don't know when's the last time they were held under 50 yards on the ground, but that was really impressive by Alabama, and I think that it's important for Wisconsin, who's dealing with a restructured offensive line, a lot of new players, plus, you know, Corey Clement, new starting running back. He has a groin injury. I don't know if he's going to play or not. I think it's important for them to kind of just feel good about that running game again after opening up the season with such a struggle on the ground. But Miami of Ohio won't be any problem. I think it's just about getting that good feeling of pounding an opponent back.
Right, and now we're going to move on to Hawaii at the number one ranked Ohio State Buckeyes. That game's at 3:30 on Big Ten Network. Ohio State looked like it, looked like it was on the ropes there for a little bit against Virginia Tech, going down 17-14 at halftime. But Virginia Tech lost their starting quarterback, and Ohio State took off from there. That run by Braxton Miller, where he did that spin move, was unbelievable. They ended up winning 42-24 against the Virginia Tech defense, who's usually pretty stout. That atmosphere down there was awesome. So it was an impressive win for the Buckeyes. They come home and play Hawaii, who knocked off Colorado last week and has had nine days to get prepared for the Buckeyes, and Ohio State's coming off a short week. So maybe, you know, that plays a little bit into it. Hawaii stays with them maybe for the first quarter, but Hawaii is also coming to the Eastern time zone from whatever time zone they're out there on the from Island time. And that might screw things up for them as well. I expect Ohio State to win this game big. It shouldn't be close. I expect them to get backups and we'll see both quarterbacks play again.
Yeah, interesting note on Hawaii. Some of you might remember former USC quarterback Max Whittick, a very high-profile recruit that went to USC, and like many USC quarterbacks, just didn't stick there and transferred after he wasn't named the starter. So he is he's in Hawaii now, and they're massive underdogs as Ohio State returns Joey Bosa, Jalen Marshall, and Dontre Wilson, who, again, in their incredibly impressive opener, those three didn't even play. So options abound for the Buckeyes. They will have no problem on Saturday, and they probably won't have much of a problem for quite a bit of this season until maybe till November. I don't know. They look like an unstoppable train right now.
Yeah, and the next game we got is another Pac-12 Big Ten matchup. Washington State travels to New Jersey to take on Rutgers at 3:30 on ESPNU. It's been a rough couple weeks off the field for Rutgers, but they took out whatever frustrations they had, they took out on Norfolk State, going 63-13 in that win. Washington State fell to FCS foe. I believe it was Portland State, them. It's stunning win over there. So, you know, the Cougars are coming off a low. Rutgers coming off a high. Chris Lovanio, who was suspended the first half, has been named the starter for this game. So we'll see what Rutgers does. It's 3:30 ESPNU. It should be, a pretty good game. It was a great game last year up in Seattle. Mm-hmm. That Rutgers won late on some big pass plays and came back. So that'll be a game to keep your eye on as you're tailgating in Bloomington or getting ready to watch the IU game from your couch. So tune into that if you do like points again.
Yeah, I think that'll be a fun one, and it's always fun to watch Leonte Carew. He had 3 third-quarter touchdowns after being suspended for the first half. It's kind of like Rutgers was waiting for him to get back into the game so he could come in and kind of put on his Superman cape and just fly Rutgers away from Norfolk State. But, yeah, I was not surprised that Leviano was declared the starter. He had a very nice second half, and this is an interesting one. It's expected to be a very, very close one. I think that the spread is like 2 or something, but it's expected to be a close game. So I think this will be a fun one to watch at 3:30. There's a couple of national games on at 3:30, but really that time slot, there's not a ton going on this week. The SEC game is Georgia-Vanderbilt, which, you know, we watched Vanderbilt last week, and I don't think Georgia's going to have much of a problem with them. So this one could be a good option for you to have on at 3:30.
Yep, and next, another good game at 3:30 would be Minnesota at Colorado State. It's on CBS Sportsnet. Hopefully those who do get CBS Sportsnet do tune in for this. Colorado State's a quality program, even though they did lose their head coach and starting quarterback after last year. They did beat Savannah State, who's not a quality program, 65-13 in their opener. The Gophers, you know, they hung tough with TCU. They kept it close. It's a one-score game. So it'll be strength against strength, you know, offense against defense for Minnesota. If they could score enough points to beat Colorado State up there in, I believe it's Colorado Springs at altitude, it'll be a tough game for Jerry Kill's squad. So, you know, we'll see if Minnesota starts 0-2. It wouldn't be a shocker. I said this game at the beginning of the year was going to be tough for them, but you know, we'll see. It's a good game. If you have CBS Sportsnet, it's a good game to tune into.
Yeah, Minnesota played without their top 2 left tackles last week, so they were a bit hindered on the offensive line. And for them, it's going to be a stout defense. All season, I think that their defense was very impressive, particularly the secondary. They have a very physical secondary. It's going to be that. The question mark is going to be whether or not they can produce enough points to take advantage of their strong defense. And I think that they will at Colorado State, but it's certainly no walkover. It's tough to go out west, play at altitude, and then Colorado State's a good team. So that's going to be a tough game for Minnesota. They are not doing themselves any favors with the schedule, but it does lighten up a bit after this week for them.
Yeah, next we got Eastern Illinois at Northwestern. That's at 4 on ESPN News. Eastern Illinois is the alma mater of Jimmy Garoppolo and Tony Romo, but they will not be dressing for the Panthers this weekend. Northwestern's coming off a huge win over Stanford at home last week. Their defense looked very, very good. And hopefully, you know, maybe the Wildcats build on that win and don't just, you know, sit on their laurels and let Eastern Illinois, you know, stay in the game. Eastern Illinois did lose to Western Illinois, so maybe the opponent, the strength, Northwestern will be fired up for this one to go 2-0.
Yeah, I don't think they'll have any problem. It's just another opportunity for Clayton Thorson, who, you know, he played mistake-free football, but he certainly could stand to improve on his efficiency some. Did not have a very good completion percentage against Stanford, which, you know, good defense, but I think they'll just be looking to fine-tune some things on the offensive side of the ball and make sure that they can get through this one without having anybody hurt. Next up, they go to Duke. That's another tough game for them, but this week they'll have no problem going to 2-0.
Yeah, next up is the Cy-Hawk Trophy game between Iowa and Iowa State. That's at 4:45, weird time slot on Fox. But, you know, we'll see. Iowa lost their former safety, Tyler Sash. So some sad news, only the age of 27. Maybe they'll be fired up and play for him. You know, you hopefully, you know, they take something positive out of that. We'll see. Iowa State, you know, Iowa looked, you know, we said that they would be upset by Illinois State. They look good. It was 31-14. So, but going on the road, first test for CJ Beathard on the road this year, and we'll see. And, you know, the Cyclones, they handled Northern Iowa, who's been close to upsetting Iowa a couple of times, 31-7. So we'll see. Usually it's a good game. You know, Iowa State has stuck it to Iowa the last few years.
Yeah, I was surprised. Iowa State has won 3 of 4 in this series, and the last 4 games have all been within 6 points. So I would expect the same with this one, but I was really, really impressed by Iowa, particularly Drew Ott on defense. He's a monster. And on offense, you know, they ran a little bit more up-tempo, threw in some no-huddle. C.J. Beathard was efficient. And I thought that LaShawn Daniels looked like the answer for them at running back. So it was a very good first week for Iowa.
Yeah, next we move on to the site of maybe the finish of the year this year. South Alabama and Nebraska. Nebraska lost a heartbreaker to BYU last week on a Hail Mary. Kind of, you know, maybe, you know, evening out for that Hail Mary against Northwestern a couple of years ago. But they should get win one of the Mike Riley era started. So that game's at 8 o'clock. It goes against IU on the Big Ten Network as well. So, you know, tune into that just to see, you know, don't tune into that because we want you watching IU. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Nebraska rebounds. They should rebound and play pretty well against South Alabama.
Yep, agreed. It will not take long for Mike Riley to get that first win, but they're going to be hurting from that loss to BYU for quite some time, I think. That definitely appeared to be a gut punch.
Yeah, the headliner for Saturday night is Oregon at Michigan State. Michigan State's ranked 3rd. Oregon is ranked 7th. Michigan State didn't look all that impressive in a win over Western Michigan at Western Michigan, a rare time that they'll go on the road against a MAC school. But a win is a win. Game day is going to be up in Lansing. The atmosphere should be terrific, and Michigan State is looking at payback. Oregon did put up 61 points in a week one win over Eastern Washington. However, they did give up 42 points, so their defense might, you know, be struggle against an offense in Michigan State, while their offense might struggle to score against a defense like Michigan State. So, you know, look for – this is a game Michigan State has had circled for a while. Look for them to come out on fire, and I think the Spartans come away with the win here.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest non-conference game that Michigan State has had in a very long time. You're probably going back to maybe a game against Notre Dame or something when the Irish were, you know, in the top 5. But this is a huge game for Michigan State. It's a really big game for the Big Ten. And I think after week one, it's a big game for the Pac-12 as well because they had so many, I guess, bad losses. Arizona State getting pummeled by A&M, Stanford losing to Northwestern. I mean, it's a big game for both conferences, just perception-wise. The only thing that I'm sure of is that there's going to be a lot of points. I don't think either defense will be able to slow down the opposing offenses. It should be fun. I will tell you, you know, record that game. You've got a DVR. You've got, you know, your Genie or whatever service you have. Record that or watch it later and watch IU and then check back on Sunday morning for the Oregon-Michigan State game. But a lot of good football in week two. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've got a lot of great games in week two. Check back with HoosierHuddle.com for all the coverage of IU. We'll have a Know Your Opponent on FIU coming up later today or tomorrow. We'll have some keys to victory coming out as well. TJ's Game Day Primer will be out on Friday. It'll have links to everything, plus a few storylines heading into the game. TJ, thanks for joining us today. Always a pleasure hosting these shows with you and talking some football. Enjoy the rest of your week, Hoosier Nation. Football starts up again tomorrow. Western Kentucky plays, so, you know, get that, you know, IU plays them next week. Get that out of the way and have a great weekend.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.